Don't forget, later on, we're going to be back in the garden with Paul. So if you have any questions about gardening at this time of the year, of course, get in touch with us right now. Potted plants, hedges, trees, bushes, whatever it might be. 086 60 25 000. The phones generally light up when Paul joins us. So if you want to make sure your question is answered, please get it into us as soon as you can. Now, if you don't want to text, you don't have to. 07491 25 000. And just a reminder that if you're listening outside of the Republic, wherever you are, 00353 86 60 25 000. Good to have that number in your phone, because you never know when you might want to get in contact with us. A caller says there's just not enough capacity in Letterkenny Hospital. Another hospital and a minor injury unit needs to be set up ASAP in the south and in the north of Donegal to help the situation. In 2013, after flooding in Letterkenny, they talked about setting up minor injury units. That was 10 years ago and not one yet. Why not? Why not make these changes to help patients and staff alike? There are X-ray units in Killybegs and Donegal Town. Why is the new HSC unit in Donegal Town not have a NowDoc centre and minor injury unit for southwest Donegal? Make a great deal of sense. It really would. I think lots of people have would be able to benefit from that. We have a poll running on our social media. And I don't have that poll, just the question in front of me. I'll grab that and I'll get to some of your contributions to it. I was in A&E on Saturday night, hurt my foot. I explained to the triage nurse that I was with my son in A&E on Saturday night who had hurt his foot. I explained to the triage nurse that he had autism and that he would likely get agitated, and they got us in and out in 2 hours. I want to thank their efforts for everything they did, and show a positive story indeed. And that is a typical story of staff trying their best to help people in that difficult situation. Many of you getting involved in the conversation about Castlefin Credit Union. We've had a number of texts on this. And by the way, if you want to come on and talk about it as well, we'll cover it in the news. But if you want to talk about the closure of Castlefin Credit Union, please get in touch with us. We're more than happy to cover that too. This listener says it's an invaluable asset to the town, widely used. A lot of the clients are elderly and may not be able to drive to Ballybuffet. There is a huge spin-off to the local St. Vincent de Paul shop, as a lot of the credit union customers go up to the shop after they complete their business in the credit union. A big loss of income for SVP shop. It is as much a social loss as a practical financial service loss for the community. It's a meeting social point for the local community on Saturdays. The credit union should engage fully with locals, and maybe some vacant property in the town could be found and renovated, even if nothing is available at the moment. Another, the closure is going to be such a big loss to the people of Castlefin and the surrounding areas who avail of the sub office on a Saturday. It's used by young and old alike, and some who might have difficulty getting to Ballybuffet all the time. Also, the credit union in Ballybuffet closes at 3. Hopefully, they'll be able to source new premises in Castlefin. Another, it's a terrible blow for Castlefin. And I know Greg will hear how it will seriously impact the community, particularly the older members of the community. Travelling to Ballybuffet is just not an option for many. And now, particularly when the Ballybuffet office have still not reverted to their pre-COVID opening times, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. is barely suitable for those in the Twin Towns area. So it's now reliant on the Saturday opening. Again, we're going to be covering this, of course, in more detail, but if you want to get involved in the conversation on the future of the Castlefin Credit Union, which seems to have been decided, 086 60 25 000. On our social media, on Highland Radio on Facebook, we have the following question. First Holy Communion season has begun, and for many families, it's now become a costly one-day affair. Do you agree with this? Get in touch with us and leave your comments on that social media post. Is it putting pressure on you? Is it a problem for you? 086 60 25 000 if you want to get involved by text, or go on to our Facebook, as Elaine and Agnes have. Elaine says, I think Holy Communion is about how much the child gets on that day. Elaine, I imagine you believe it shouldn't be. And Agnes says it's only as expensive as you want to make it. Okay, which makes a bit of sense too. Okay, we go to listener Mary, who has been stuck in the ED at Letterkenny University Hospital for an awful long time. Mary, good morning to you.
Good morning, how are you?
I'm all right.
I'm still here.
Oh, my word. What's the situation, Mary?
Well, I arrived here yesterday evening at 20 minutes to 6 with a suspected clot in my leg. I did not meet the triage nurse to 9 o'clock. At 9:15, I had an ECG. and I got no blood done until 5:40 this morning. I have got no results and I have not seen a doctor yet. So I'm coming in 18 hours waiting here today.
And what have you done overnight? Where have you a bed or a trolley or you sitting?
No, we're sitting in the hard chairs. Yes, we are. The nurse came out one stage and gave us a blanket. There's women here with their children waiting. They haven't got through. There's been no x-rays done. They're still waiting on x-rays yet. It's desperate here.
Mm. And have you been told anything about your condition, Mary? Obviously, you wouldn't have attended if you didn't think it was serious.
No, I'm in the queue. I asked about 30 minutes ago. I'm in the queue, so I'll be here a while yet.
Right. And
it's terrible.
You don't know if you need to be admitted or anything yet either?
I don't know. I have never seen a doctor yet.
No medication, no nothing, just the
ECG?
No, nothing.
Right. Yes.
And what was it like on those chairs overnight, Mary?
It's not comfortable, definitely not. No, some people were in wheelchairs. We were just sitting in the ordinary hard chairs. The nurses did come on one stage and give us blankets when it was getting cooler. But the wait was horrendous, definitely.
And how many, was it busy?
Well, at one stage last night there was 104 waiting.
Right.
And the place was packed here.
And do people just get up and leave, Mary, or do they hang around?
A lot of people left last night. Now, at about 7 o'clock, a manager came down to have a word. We had to listen to her, and she told us anybody that felt that they could go home and they'd be seen this morning again.
Mm.
Otherwise, there were delays.
Yeah, indeed. And that actually tallies perfectly with...
People left, but the place is packed now again. They're starting to pile on now again. We're not getting priority from last night. We're just sitting here waiting. There's children here with broken wrists, haven't got an x-ray yet.
Right, okay. And are you going to stick it out, Mary? You have to, don't you?
I have to, yeah. I sat this long now, I have to, yeah.
And are you on your own?
I am indeed, yes. Yep.
And what about...
We've met in with other people, we're talking, we keep them on another company, but we're not getting over.
And what about a cup of tea or something to eat? Or?
Yes, they came around one stage. One lady here, lovely lady from Cairn Donna, went to the shop during the night and took us all back sandwiches. Staff did come around with cups of tea, all right, and tea and toast to keep us going.
It's unbelievable, Mary, that what you're having to go through.
It is, yes. We've heard it on the radio before, but until you experience it here, it's awful.
I know, and people think we kind of go on about it, but I think until, as you say, you've sat there. And have you ever seen anything like this before? Have you had to attend before?
No, never seen a spike of crowd here before.
Mm.
No, definitely not.
And you've no idea when you might be seen either?
I haven't a clue. The last time I asked there, about 30 minutes ago, they told me, I'm in the queue, I'll be here a while yet.
Wow. And are you worried about, given the fact that it's a clot in your leg, or potentially, and we hope it's not?
I have a clot in my leg, and I also have blocked arteries, so I have to stay put.
But sitting on those hard chairs couldn't be good for you?
Yes. No, indeed it's not, no. But sure, you just get up and walk around, but you get the chance, that's it.
Right, okay.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And if you're effectively...
So it's a bad situation here at the moment.
Okay. All right, Mary.
Definitely it is.
Right, okay. Listen, I'm sorry for what you're going through. I really am.
Okay, well, it's not just me. There's loads of people here.
Okay.
Yeah, it's serious now here at the moment.
All right.
Nurses are great. They're doing their best, but there's something not right. Definitely something gone wrong.
And you're saying young people there with suspected broken bones and stuff as well?
Oh, there is, yeah. They're sitting beside me. Yeah. Young lads were playing football and that, coming in last night. They were coming in early. One lad beside me with a broken ankle, his home is nagging.
Any medicine for him at all or anything?
His mum got some painkillers for him a while ago, yeah.
And he's been there overnight as well?
Yep. Mm-hmm. A young lad of 11, he has a broken wrist. Nothing happening.
Oh, my word. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, sounds like absolute chaos, Mary. It really does.
It does indeed, yes.
What you have too, you've got people, and I'm sure you're one of them, that then, you know, don't want to hold anyone else up, or you can go in front of me or whatever, but everyone's got their own problems to try and get sorted.
That's right, yeah.
Mary, thanks for your insights.
No problem at all.
And keep us updated. All right, Mary, thank you. Okay.
I will indeed. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
That's Mary there. 18 hours coming up in the emergency department. She is has a suspected clot in her leg, a suspected clot in her arteries, I think she mentioned, didn't she? And she has not been seen yet. She's had an ECG and nothing else, no medicine. And you heard from Mary there sitting alongside young fellas, in this case, with clearly what sounded very much like broken ankles and broken wrists, no x-rays yet. They've all been sitting there overnight, some in wheelchairs, Mary herself on a hard chair. She's had tea and toast and a blanket. And thankful to the staff, of course, but another listener was in contact with me. I won't give her name just because there's probably... but I'll just read what they say, and they sent me a video as well. I'm in A&E. The manager just came round. This is exactly what my last guest was talking about. The manager came round and announced that if anyone feels they can go home and return tomorrow morning, they say it's a disgrace. I'm up with my wee girl for an X-ray. We've been here since 20 past five yesterday evening. I still have not been triaged. I got Calpol because I asked, took into triage and took the Calpol, sent out, and no word about the injuries. That was at 10 to 8 last night. That's when I got that message. And then I got an update at 20 past 7 this morning. So that's another 11 hours later. I'd been to bed and everything. Hi, Greg, I'm still here. I'm still sitting here with four other parents, 14 hours now waiting on a simple X-ray. And that's their situation. And we might actually get to speak to that person if they're still there, and to get an insight, a further insight as to what is going on there and people's experiences. Why can't GPs help you the same way anymore? I don't understand. Why is this the way? I don't think GPs ever really could do x-rays and stuff. But as I said before in the program, I remember going back quite some time ago that you'd go and get an x-ray in the hospital in Donegal Town. There was no talk of going up to Letterkenny or anything like that. Okay, we heard from Mary, who has been in Letterkenny University Hospital overnight, keeping a brave face on it, seemingly. Geraldine is another person who's been stuck in the hospital for a long time now. Thanks for taking the call, Geraldine. No sleep, I'd imagine.
Hi, Greg. How are you?
I'm all right.
I'm just pulled in here. I'm just still on the way home from Letterkenny. It must have been probably 15 hours at that stage. We probably got out around 9:30 this morning from 20 past 5 yesterday evening. And the wee girl there just needed an x-ray. Mm-hmm. And there was about another four parents there with their kids as well that needed x-rays. And we were all sitting. They were still there when I left. And the nurse that is called the Purple Zone came on there this morning, and she couldn't believe that we weren't told, you know, last night to come back this morning at 8:00, because that's when they start.
So in other words, you sat there all night, and it's not that you were in a queue. There was actually no one would do the x-rays.
Like, they were giving us hope that, you know, the doctor would get around to us and maybe get an x-ray. So we were kind of going with that. But I kept going on asking, you know, like, where am I now? And they were saying, no, you're number 7, now you're number 5. Still number 5, and that keep us going that we might be seen for sure. The next thing I looked out the window was daylight. You know, like, it's an awful long time. Like, the wee girl had to go out to the car and have a sleep. Do you know what I mean? I had to pull the car up near the door so that I would see her out the window.
She must have been exhausted and in pain too. So,
and
you went in
fair
at 20.
Play to the staff.
Yeah, we'll get to that if you don't mind, Geraldine. But you went in at 25 past 5. Obviously, your daughter injured her ankle, I think it was, wasn't it? So when you
it was her wrist.
Her wrist. So when you went in then, you would have thought, right, we might be here till 10 or 11 o'clock. Talk to us about how the evening went. Because I think then you also heard a manager come in, like Mary did, at about 10 to half 7, say, look at...
I can't remember exactly whatever time I had text you or whatever, just to let you know what was going on. And so they came out and announced to say, whoever can go home to go home and can return in the morning. Mm-hmm. You know, but not meaning like we were still thinking that we were going to be x-rayed.
Yes,
you know
course.
What I mean?
Yep.
So like we stayed, and like my daughter was very sore. And like that, I got Calpol, and I was taken in. The triage nurse gave us the Calpol, and didn't really ask anything else and sent us back out. So, like, I had to go back and to triage again.
Right. Okay. So then, that what was overnight like? You talked about your daughter being able to get out to the car, which is not ideal, having to pull the car close to the door. No. You yourself stuck on a chair, were you?
And there was another person as well that pulled their car because their son had an injury to his ankle and he was waiting on x-ray. And, like, there were so many there. There was a bunch of us there. Like, there was probably 10 between the kids and the adults. There were 10 people that could have went home and came back up for 8 o'clock this morning instead of that whole everybody lying on any. And at one stage, there was a woman with a child lying on the floor because she couldn't, she needed a wee sleep.
Yeah.
She actually put a blanket on the floor and lay on the floor.
Right. And there was very little communication overnight, I'd imagine.
No, like, we went on for updates, but we were told, like, as you're number 7, you're number 5, and the hope that we would soon be seen. But the hours passed and they passed and we were never seen. And then eventually, like, very early morning, as I'm like maybe around 7 or whatever, the nurse says to me, you know, the purple zone that deals with the injuries, you know, for x-rays and all is starting at 8 o'clock. So I was like, so you mean tell me now it's going to be 8 o'clock, you know, as in. So she was like, yeah, they deal with that. So in fairness, when they did come on, I went back in, and the nurse there couldn't believe that they didn't tell us all to go home and return at 8 o'clock this morning.
Because they could have said to you up to 8 o'clock last evening, they could have said, sorry people, but the injury docs are off duty now at 8 o'clock and won't return to 8 o'clock in the morning. You could have gone home and then returned.
Yeah, absolutely. We could have all returned. And like the way, like, all the wings, they were all knackered. They were lying, trying to get comfortable. Nobody could get comfortable. It was awful. And, like, there was another older lady, and she was there on her own. And not one person came out. There was people, like, taking her to the toilet, getting her coffee, tea, and, like, she was there on her own. And nobody came out to look about her. Mm. Like, I don't know. Like, to me, the management system is just, I don't know what to say.
Have you ever seen anything like
it? I really don't. Do you know what? I've been up on A&E before, but from the time that I walked into that hospital yesterday evening, I thought, oh my God, there was people standing everywhere. But, like, regards to x-rays, there should be a room where people have taken for x-rays and get them in, get them out. There's no need for, like, say 10 or 12 people that need x-rays to be sitting there, like, 15 hours.
Yeah.
So that's just taking up space for people that, you know what I mean? Like, that is really sick. You know, that kind of way.
Yeah, well, 104 people were in there at one stage, we were told. Your daughter's wrist's not broken, I take it. Tendon damage or something?
No, it's actually badly sprained, and she's a splint on and flying for 2 weeks. So.
Right, and that often is the case, you see. And if we could get people like her through the x-ray quicker, yous would be in and out. Do you know what I mean?
I just don't get it.
Right, okay, listen, I better let you back on the road and get some sleep. If you can.
Okay.
You probably don't with all the other life responsibilities.
Oh, I don't.
But Camille, listen, thanks very much for keeping me updated and helping us to tell this story.
Okay.
I appreciate it. Safe home and best wishes to your daughter.
Thanks.
And hopefully it heals up really quick. Thanks very much indeed for that. Paddy's with us too. Paddy, what was your experience? It wasn't last night, but you were in the hospital. You went in on Friday evening, did you?
Yes, Greg. I went in on Friday morning and I had some wild pain, sir, on the chest on Friday morning, and I struggled on as long as I could, and I'd come to a stage in where I couldn't, the pain was that bad. So I landed up, and I was in. Now, in fairness, I got in the back after the ambulance, and got that. So Saturday morning, I was in, and they turned round, and they says, right, we're sending you down for a cardiac investigations for a stress test on Tuesday at some time. So I says, right, that's grand. What do I do? Can I go home and free this bed up and come back on Tuesday as outpatients or something like that? Oh, no, you have to stay here in that bed. And I says, there's a woman down that corridor. She's 83 years of age. She's lying sitting in a wheelchair all night. And she asked the night porter, to turn round and give her two pillows. And your man says, what do you want the two pillows for? She says, I'm feared to fall off this wheelchair and split myself if I fall asleep. She says, all that I want is to lie on that floor there and two pillows. And your man says, oh, no, 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 you can't lie down there. So this is 83 years of age, Greg, right? She says, will you wheel me out that place, out past the canopy at the A&E? Your man says, oh, no, 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 you'll be grand. That woman lay there all night. I think it was about half three. And then I was sitting up, lying up in a bed that I'd... I was well fit to go home and come back up Tuesday morning. And all day Tuesday passed, I come a stage where I says, right, I'm taking a walk down here to this cardiac investigations to see what's going on. I walk down and I says to them, I says, it's Paddy Murphy here. I says, I was to get in and get a stress test done here today. And I says, she looked up the thing. She says, your name is not even in this. And just as that, I had to get out of there. I says, so you're saying that I'm lying in the bed all weekend. And I wasn't even booked in. The doctors didn't even book me in. The management in that place, Craig, has to go. And everybody in Donegal and around here needs to get behind this and drive this on now. Keep that drive, because there's people lying up there. That woman was dead. It didn't matter to me. But there's people there at 83 and 85, 90 years of age. That's cruel.
So
that is not humane at this day and age. And if it's money or whatever they need, take the money out of somewhere else and pump it into it. Like, it's not to say that it's a care or something else. This is... That's people in there. And the politicians are a waste of time here in this county here. Every one of them. And I would tell any one of them that tear their face. And I'm telling it on live radio now. The whole thing, I have never witnessed this to what I witnessed at the weekend. And I come up, I was out the back then yesterday footing about, I was just poisoned lying in the hospital, and I come out to get something done. It's just, and then you're out of breath. They don't know, they've never even done the test, and the thing's not even booked in.
All right, so you're
so
still...
So I don't know, like, yeah. I don't know what's going on, you know.
Well, Paddy, mate, I know you're worried about other people, but look, make sure you're looking after yourself. If you had chest pains and you're short of breath too, do you know what I mean? You have to make sure that you look after yourself too, Paddy.
Right.
Okay.
I know, Greg, but that's the management on the place.
Okay.
The management, like, a man lying in a bed for Saturday, Sunday, Monday and all day Tuesday, and if I was there the day, I would still be sitting, and that thing wasn't even booked in. I went down to that Sean Murphy's office, and that man hasn't even rung. Like, I'm only, that's not, what did I tell you, I'm not, there's men in there with arms, what not hanging off them, I'm not, you know what I mean, thank God, but there's people worse off than me.
Yeah,
a lot worse off than me, and if they don't do something about it, hey, that place there, that... I took a walk around it.
Yep.
The plaster is even hanging off the walls. There's dampness all through the doors going on and out of the place. The place is a shams.
All right, Paddy.
A complete and utter shams. That's what that place is up there.
All right, I have to head for the news. Paddy, make sure to look after yourself, will you?
All right, Greg. No bother. Right.
Right, look
on.
After yourself. Take care. Now, it's a very important day for Derry St. Eugene's Cathedral, which turns 150, with the main focus, the anniversary day, let's call it, that for the cathedral itself, taking place today. Tonight, Donna will be singing her song dedicated to St. Patrick. You might remember we had Donna on the show and played the song out there not so long ago, and she's been singing it in a number of places. And of course, it would make perfect sense for her to do so this evening to mark this this anniversary. I'm delighted to welcome onto the show Bishop Donal McKeown now. Good morning to you, Bishop. Thanks so much
Good
for
morning.
Your time today.
You're very welcome. You're good to talk to you again.
Yes, indeed. 150 years. It's a long time. What is the focus of this anniversary? Because I suppose you try and pick a theme, do you? Or
well, I suppose it's an opportunity, like all anniversaries are, whether it's the Good Friday Agreement or a birthday or anything else, it's a chance to look back on the past with gratitude, to enable us to look forward to the future with confidence and trust. So in many ways, it celebrates a stage in this cathedral's life, in that they began planning shortly after the Catholic Emancipation Act of 1829, in other words, the mid-1830s, and actually it took 100 years before it was completed and paid for in 1936, a full 100 years. So what we're celebrating this week is the opening of the building on the 4th of May, 1873, and celebrating all the things that have happened in it and the great people that have come from it. You asked about a theme. We chose three themes to highlight just this place. One was women and the shirt factories, and Marie Horton has done an absolute masterpiece of a chasuble and a mitre for use in the cathedral here, celebrating the shirt factory women, a talent that they had and the contribution they made, not just to making shirts but to building communities, as I said on Sunday. We've emphasised the mission to young people who really are in a desperate situation in terms of stress and distress and loneliness, with the blessing yesterday of the statue of Blessed Carlo Acutis, that young 15-year-old saint from Italy who died in 2006. And we've emphasised the environment as well, with the presentation last Sunday of two oak saplings for every parish in the diocese. So we've tried to take up themes like that that can be quite concrete.
Yeah, and I mean, it's got a wonderful history, and I'm sure it's had a huge impact on so many people's spiritual lives, and outside of the spiritual element of it, if you separate the two. So all of that will be marked. I would say there's just so many memories that people have, those that are still with us and those that have passed, associated with this great building.
I hope so. I mean, I'm a stranger here. I'm only 9 years in Derry, so anything that happened before 2014 is all alien to me. But we had the Apostolic Nuncio, the Pope's ambassador to Ireland, who only arrived in Ireland Tuesday of last week. He came to us on Sunday and took part in the ceremony. And as he was leaving the cathedral, he said to me, "Bishop, you have a living community here." And I hope that's what we can celebrate. A community that enjoys coming together, a community that's turned out in great numbers over this past couple of days, a community that's proud of its identity and that wants to continue to be an active civic partner in making this a wonderful city, as it has done down through the years. So, yes, I think it's a time for recognising, yes, maybe famous people, Bishop Kelly, who was the man mainly involved in building the cathedral, but the enormous numbers of ordinary people who simply have used this as a place to come, to laugh, to cry, to celebrate, to hug, to be comforted, to start, all of those things. And I hope we can sort of see it as a faith community, particularly this evening. Sunday was the diocesan element of the cathedral as the mother church of the diocese. Yesterday was young people, but today is the local parish community.
Yeah. A statue has been commissioned for the cathedral as well as part of these celebrations. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, as I mentioned, there's this young guy, Carlo.
Oh, right, okay, yes, I didn't pick that up. Okay, go ahead, Bishop, sorry.
Yes, we decided with a special emphasis on how to hand on mercy and healing and hope to young people who, as you know yourself, are suffering so much from stress and distress, mental illness, fear about the future, fragility of relationships, violence on the streets, all of those things. How can we find someone who, in the midst of all of that, offers hope? So we actually commissioned a carved statue from Ortizé in the north of Italy of Blessed Carlo Acutis. His mother sent us a lock of his hair. So we hope that it can become a place that will enable young people to find strength and encouragement and consolation, to believe that they too can be saints. And they, like many people before them, can be a blessing on the world by their commitment to justice, environment, to peace, to love, to forgiveness, to reconciliation, and all of those things. So it's meant to be just a symbol of that call to holiness that we want all young people to hear, to be heroes in their own time.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, there's been a number of Masses already. Tonight at 7:30 p.m., you will be celebrating a Mass. Bishop, as I mentioned, Donna will be singing the song she released recently, which is a great story in and of itself behind it, dedicated to St. Patrick at the Mass. Everybody is welcome. It should be a very special occasion. I think it will be.
Yes, Sunday was the diocesan Mass, where we had people from every parish, and water was brought from every parish in the diocese and blessed, and then we were all sprinkled with it, and that was used yesterday as well. This is the local event. This is the parish event. This is where everybody is welcome to come along, whether you've been here a lot recently, or whether your granny used to come here and you heard talk about it, or whether you saw it on the webcam during lockdown. This is meant to be much more of a relaxed local community event, and ice cream vans afterwards, and all of that sort of thing. It's a celebration of the community that has made this a sacred place by their prayers and by the feet that they've walked in and out of it so often at all hours of the day and night. So I hope it's a celebration of their local identity and of their confidence in terms of facing the future as well.
What's the last 9 years been like for you, Bishop? What have you learned about the community or yourself?
It's a very talented city. And obviously the Cathedral Parish and the Long Tower Parish are large parts of that. It's a very talented community in terms of music, in terms of artistic creativity, in terms, for example, of that fabulous chasuble that Marie Horton has made at home. There's a commitment to artistry. They're a gracious people, Greg, who I saw that especially at the 50th anniversary of the Bloody Sunday. They can look back on the past with all its pain and all its distress, and yet sort of say, yeah, we have compassion on where we were. A bit like the town I love so well, Phil Coulter's song. Looking back on times were tough and just about enough, but we saw it through without complaining. There were happy days in so many ways in the town I love so well. There are gracious people who have become, I think, great in their own way, not despite what they suffered, but particularly because they suffered so much together, whether it was discrimination or violence or whatever else. So I think it's a big enough place to have huge numbers of tourists coming to us and small enough to have a sense of being homely. So I feel blessed to be here after 36 years in Belfast, and I'm looking forward to them burying me whenever the time comes.
Well, we shouldn't talk about that for a while. Bishop, thank you very much indeed.
Okay, Greg,
okay, take care of yourself. Thank you very much indeed. That's Bishop Donal McKeown there. Right, 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number, or call us on 07491 25,000. Increased sales of electric vehicles, EVs, have not made a dent in transport emissions, a leading expert has said, and he has called for SUVs to be phased out of the market. Trinity College Dublin professor in the Department of Civil, Structural and Environmental Engineering, Brian Caulfield, said ever-increasing sales of SUVs or sports utility vehicles are cancelling out the emission benefits of EVs, contributing to transport emissions rising just when they should be falling. Shane O'Donoghue is a motoring journalist and editor at Complete Car, and he joins us now. They're coming for your SUVs, Shane. I mean, I understand the point he is trying to make in that, you know, we are seeing quite a big proportion of new car sales now being either full electric or some variants on it. But the streets are a throng with big, big cars with one or two people in them.
Yeah, I mean, I will point out from the start that I don't care whether people buy SUVs or what kind of cars they prefer. I don't have any preference myself. But I do think the angle here is wrong. I think, you know, Brian's obviously a very intelligent guy. He knows what he's talking about, but I think he's got the car market wrong, and he doesn't understand the car market and car engineering, actually. The term SUV is just too broad now. Once upon a time, you know, SUVs, the phrase was imported from the US, and it very much defined a very big, huge vehicle. And in fact, when the people like Brian talk about safety of SUVs and the size they got, they still refer to American data a lot of the time. Whereas when you look at the market in Ireland, the new car market in particular, the top 10, and actually I looked at it again this morning, you need to go to the 40th best selling car in Ireland before you get to an SUV that's large, that's very big.
Are you on about like a big seven-seater, like, you know, something that might not look tiny beside a car at the lights in the US?
Yeah, absolutely. So the top-selling cars in Ireland are They actually used to be called crossovers, and it's probably the car maker's own fault for marketing them as SUVs when really they're crossovers. Yeah, they're a bit, they are larger than hatchbacks and smaller cars, but they're not these gigantic, you know, stories like this actually, when you see in the media, are often illustrated by old Range Rovers or big 4x4s, where, and that's actually not the majority of the market, isn't that at all.
Yeah, the majority of them aren't they? You know, two-wheel drive, maybe 1.6, 1.7 diesel engine, 1.3 petrol engine, and then some combination of a hybrid, low brake horsepower, probably about 120, 130. You know, these aren't the big gas guzzlers that people might associate with SUVs then.
No, when people hear the phrase SUV, those are the things that come to mind, the phrase gas guzzler, the Chelsea tractors, all of that. But Ireland isn't completely overrun by such things. The vehicles we have, for the most part, are relatively small engines. As you said, two-wheel drive a lot of the time, actually. And again, looking through the new car sales, a huge number of them are hybrids, are plug-in hybrids. And so Brian's point about the offset, just purely on the offset of emissions that he's discussed, isn't quite right. Even the, just looking at the top two sellers, it's the Hyundai Tucson and the Kia Sportage this year. Yes, more than half of each of them are selling more diesels than anything, but nearly half in each case are hybrids or plug-in hybrids, and they come with very low emissions. Yeah. So his maths just don't add up.
And also, too, I'd want to know, are they taking cars away from buses and lorries, if you know what I mean? Because I'd imagine just a slight pivot in the car trade, would that really have as big of an impact on the overall output of pollutants, I wonder? I don't know if he has figures only for cars or if it is across the board.
I think in this particular instance, it seems to be, you know, an anti-SUV message. And it's something that Brian in particular has been saying for quite a long time.
But we love SUVs in this country, though. We do love. Brian obviously doesn't like them, and that's fine. But the Irish love an SUV. They're the most popular body shape at the moment, aren't they? Am I correct in saying that?
It's kind of hard. The way the SIMI, the Society of Irish Motor Industry, defines body styles is a bit all over the place sometimes. If you look on its website now, it's saying that the hatchback is actually the top-selling body style in the country. But there's no doubt. Look, you can't get away from the fact that SUVs or crossovers, realistically, are far more popular than they ever been. But, you know, what's the alternative? People are buying them for a reason. Okay, sometimes you will see people commuting and they're on their own in vehicles bigger than they want, bigger than they need, I mean. But most of the time people choose a car that they need. So by banning larger cars or penalising people that buy larger cars, you're going to be penalising families, for instance, that really do need.
But we were talking yesterday about the waste awareness plan, you know, and about how we need to get into how we handle our waste. And I was putting it to my guests that, you know, well, our stuff comes in packaging. You know, it's not necessarily our fault. We don't want the packaging. We export on boats our recycled waste out of here. In other words, they ask us to do stuff all the time, but I think the powers that be need to do what they need to do. And one of those things in the area of motoring is proper alternatives. Like, we are just up the road here from Letterkenny, Shane, and if you want to get around Letterkenny, you probably need to take your car. We don't have, you know, a modern electric bus service that circles the town a couple of times of an hour that gives us a couple of years to sort of change how we think. If you live in Malin Head, it's not easy to get to Letterkenny University Hospital if you need to. Do you know what I mean? So I think before they push us out of the vehicles, they need to be giving us fair alternatives, give us a fair crack of the whip, Shane. I think you've made that point yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. That point's been made here before with you, Greg, that, you know, this anti-car rhetoric is fine. And yeah, and in an ideal world, we'd all be zooming about in electric trams or whatever. Absolutely. But the reality in Ireland right now, and you don't even need to go to Letterkenny, you know, even very close to Dublin, the public transport is not good enough. It's not fit for purpose.
A study out today, whilst you're saying it, ranks Dublin with it's got the worst public transport in Europe.
Of a capital city, that's
of
right.
Of a capital city, yeah.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And there's no doubt about it. And it, you know, there are lots of, there's lots of talk about improving it, but it's taking a very, very long time. And that's just in the city. What hope have we for, you know, smaller towns in Ireland? And people need cars. We have to drop this anti-car rhetoric and instead encourage people to drive more efficient cars, you know, to choose cars that are better for the environment. And yet within that, we need to accept that people need cars of a certain size sometimes. And also we've got a free market. You know, you can't just say everybody has to drive a micro car. It's just not realistic.
Okay. Before I let you go, we were talking yesterday about some EU plans, it seems to be, to allow 16-year-olds drive cars. And we had a lot of people contact us, no one for it. And also to a couple of professional drivers who said having a limiter on a car would be problematic because they, as lorry and bus drivers, it takes a lot of experience and time to actually to be able to drive with that limit on. But anyway, we got no one who thought this was a good idea. Do we have someone on the line today who thinks it's a good idea? In you, Shane?
No, I'm afraid not. No, I'm absolutely strongly against the idea as well. Mainly for road safety reasons. I agree. I think the speed limit thing is completely unworkable as well. But yeah, mainly for road safety. I think it's a really bad idea. We've seen in other jurisdictions, for instance, in the US, where some states allow it, the fatality and crash rate among 16-year-olds, even in comparison to 18 and 19-year-olds, is significantly higher. All the data points to it being a really bad idea.
That's it. That's a fait accompli, really, isn't it, that it shouldn't happen? If we have statistics that show an increase in fatalities, then that should be enough, shouldn't it? I don't know who's driving this or where it could come from. I mean, we don't have the roads, really, the multi-lane roads that you might need to accommodate someone ticking along at 45 kilometres per hour. It sounds like a disaster waiting to happen.
Yeah, I agree. And in fact, the whole idea of it has come from countries that want to help mobility in rural areas. And, you know, those roads are even smaller and less safe again. So can you imagine somebody flying along on an 80 kilometres an hour road and come around a corner and suddenly there's, you know, a 16-year-old driving a car limited to 45 kilometres an hour? No, I think it's a really bad idea.
Yeah. And let's face it, our traffic laws are a basket case as it is. And we can't even really figure out how to get scooters on the road or not. So I think us trying to figure out how to sort out 16-year-olds, that's, even if we wanted to, I think it's about 20 years down the line anyway.
Yeah, there's so much we have to fix about the country and road safety and our roads before we should even consider such a thing.
All right, listen, great to have you on the show as always. Thank you so much. Take care of yourself. That is Shane O'Donoghue, who is the motoring journalist and editor with Complete Car. Check them out online for more information. What do you all think about that? 086 60 25,000. That's WhatsApps and texts from outside the Republic. 00353 86 60 25,000. Give us a call on 07491 25,000 as well. We have Paul coming up after 11, taking your gardening questions. So if you want a question for Paul, get them into us now. We have seen rapid growth now. We're right in it, aren't we? We're in the fun zone in terms of getting outside. And even if you don't have a garden, maybe you've got a windowsill. Maybe you've got a little space at a flat, a small balcony. Maybe you want to know if there's something you can do with that. You don't have to always have some big, luxurious green space to ask a question of Paul.